my happy home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Hit the rowdy road, many kinds I've met there, many stories told me all of the way to get there. Ooh. So on I go, the seconds tick, the time out. There's so much left to know when I'm on.
Oh, welcome to Unspun and Experimented Truth Telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth tellers, advocates, and activists from around the world. We are streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the listen button. Unspun is a call-in show. We invite questions and comments from our listeners. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. You can also send me some email if you'd like to at unspun@kkrn.org. Pretty much like it sounds, UNSPUN at KKRN.org. Or you can follow me on Twitter at DougBennett15. Our guest today is Professor Jerry Croth, PhD. He is an associate professor emeritus in the Graduate Counseling Psychology Program at Santa Clara University in California. His academic assignments include courses in psychotherapy and personality theory, dream work, and research methods. Dr. Croth's 12 prior books were in the areas of counseling psychology, child abuse, child sexual abuse, learning disorders, metapsychology, transpersonal psychology, and research methodology. In addition, he has written and presented over 75 papers on anxiety, child development, mass psychology, synchronicity, experimental studies of the dream process, the psychology of propaganda, and collective psychology. Among his books are Duped, Delusion, Denial, and the End of the American Dream, and Omens and Oracles, Collective Psychology in the Nuclear Age. Professor Croth has a series of YouTube videos that you can access through his website, collectivepsych.com, where he talks about empire, propaganda, manipulation, mass psychology, mythology, delusion, and denialism. I could go on and on about his articles, and his videos are really excellent, so I suggest you go there. I will put links to different works of his on several – he's on several different websites also, and on YouTube you can find him and follow him there. He also has a Facebook page at Jerry Croth Collective Psychology. Professor Jerry Croth, welcome to Unspun and Experiment in Truth-Telling.
Oh, nice to be here, Doug.
Oh, I have a lot of fun, not only fun, but it's very educational watching your videos, and they're easy to access. And I really like what you're doing, because part of what I do is try to dispel myths, and we have so many of them. Are Americans totally delusional, or do we? I know we suffer under some really serious ones, but
how bad are we?
I'd say I
just did a new video, actually. I don't know if you saw it, on contrasting how much time on American primetime news we spend with fantasies like murder mysteries and JonBenet Ramsey and Amanda Knox. I don't know if you saw that video, but I attempted to quantify how much of a dream world Americans live in when they think they're watching the news versus when they are actually paying attention to reality. Like Fukushima, if you say, okay, that the Fukushima disaster, that was reality, and the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, that was reality. That was something that affected people's lives in Florida and the whole Gulf Coast. Now, if you took those stories and you compared them with the JonBenet Ramsey stories, or Amanda Knox or whatever, those kind of thrilling sexual soap opera murder mysteries that are ongoing. It's incredible. It's like 70% of primetime news broadcasts are about those things, Charlie Sheen, the Kardashians, and only about 30% of Wolf Blitzer, Brian Williams, or all the other primetime news broadcasts are about reality. So you can actually almost answer your question and say about 70% of the time.
And to come to the defense of the American population, it's not all our fault. As you described, the media is, and even some of the shows that you're citing as being reality, I would question the information presented in them sometimes.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think the essence of the corporate media is that we want to sell you Preparation H and Geico Insurance and Toyotas. And how are we going to do that? We have to find a news bureau that is going to get a market share of people who are going to go, oh, my God, did you hear about that? And some stories, like the Higgs boson, just don't have that resonance to them. So do you know how many times the story of the Higgs boson, the most important discovery in physics, actually got on primetime news?
I couldn't even imagine, but I can imagine it's a very small number.
9 times.
Yeah.
And JonBenet Ramsey was on television for 200 on primetime news 257 times.
Yeah, we were deluged with that emotional, like you said, it's soap opera material presented to us almost as reality TV.
Exactly, exactly. It is, and it masquerades as the news. And in fact, you could say these things actually did happen. So it is news because it is real, but it's very selectively edited and decided upon that we're going to cover this particular kidnapping and not that kidnapping, or this particular sex slave story in Cleveland as opposed to a new invention that came out of Xerox Corporation, which is boring, you know.
Well, we saw the same sort of allotting of time from network television in the run-up to the Iraq War, and we saw the same disparity. People that were talking about peace and reality only got a very small portion of that airtime as compared to the people that wanted the war and to sell you, well, quite exactly. Literally sell you the lie.
Exactly. Now, do you remember the Scott Ritter?
Oh, yeah.
Scott Ritter was one of the American UN inspectors in Iraq, and he said all along, there are no nuclear weapons in Iraq. I've been all over the country. I don't know where you guys are getting this stuff from. Just, you know, it's not true. It's just not true. And then there were people like Richard Pearl, if you remember him, and Wolfowitz. They were saying the opposite. They're saying, well, you know, Saddam Hussein has these weapons, these aluminum tubes, and they're going to give them to terrorists like bin Laden. Well, if you quantify, Richard Pearl was on television about 160, 180 times, and Wolfowitz about the same amount. Scott Ritter got on TV about 4 times. So, I mean, the skewing of the facts was, you know, in the leading up to the invasion of Iraq was just amazing.
And you talk about this because you also have done some research on Imperial America, and maybe we could talk about that a little, because I found that very interesting, what you have discovered about that. We are an empire. I don't know how anybody would refute that.
Oh, they would miss it. But strangely enough, if you ask Americans, is America an empire? Something like 90% say no. And then another question is, would you like America to be an empire? And almost all, close to 50% say no. So the term empire is really not something Americans want to embrace. And yet it's the largest empire by far than any that has ever existed in the human race.
Yeah, and yet we are basically in denial about that fact.
I know. We have military troops, military involvement in over 130 countries. There are only 192 countries.
Yeah, and I think we have approaching 1,000 bases around the world.
Yes, and now you compare that to Russia. They have one overseas military base. China has no, but they're trying to build one overseas military. We beat Russia and China 1,000-1 when it comes to overseas military bases.
Yeah, and somehow when they build an overseas base or even attempt to create a little island base out in the ocean near their own country, somehow they're aggressors.
Yeah, if you read the paper today, it says China is militarizing the South China Sea. Well, we have aircraft carriers and armadas regularly cruising there, but they are the ones who are militarizing the South China Sea.
Yeah, and I was stationed in Japan for almost a year back in the mid-60s, and we don't even recognize the fact that we're occupying countries all around Japan, South Korea, or all around China, you know, South Korea and Japan, of course, who we'd occupied, literally occupied as a with a troop presence and bases there since the end of the Second World War. And somehow China's little base there is a large...
bothering us. You know, I was thinking that we are building something like a 20, or I'm sorry, I don't have my numbers right. It could be a $2 billion naval base in South Korea. That's right, $2 billion base that's going to house 20 naval warships, American naval warships. But what Americans don't realize, we think, oh, okay, we're building a base in South Korea, our allies. But South Korea is 150 miles from China. So, in effect, we're building a gigantic naval base 150 miles from the borders of China.
Yeah, and we don't seem to even question that. I think people read these things and without questioning or putting it in any kind of perspective. But this is not unusual. I've done a lot of study on our history, and when I was reading some of your articles, I was thinking we have been delusional from the beginning. You could take the Declaration of Independence as the illusion and the Constitution and the actual government of the United States as the reality, and we have lived under that illusion of freedom and justice for all and all those things espoused in the Declaration of Independence, which was ended up being kind of a propaganda document.
Yeah, and we have a Russian friend who was a Russian poet, I think, who said, you know, your American Constitution and your Declaration of Human Rights influenced the world and inspired thousands and thousands of people throughout history because it is such an elegant statement of the nature of human dignity and human freedom. And Russians, for example, always looked at that as an exemplar of the beauty of their romanticized America. But the reality is very different from our illusions. I mean, we say we have majority rule, but we did not have majority rule until 1920, when we allowed women to vote. And even then, you could argue, there were still other groups that never really got enfranchised. So we can't say we had majority rule in this country, except for maybe the last 90 years, and to say that it lasted 226 or 200, I don't know how old our country is, back to 1776, but certainly we didn't have majority rule for the majority of the time that this country has been a country.
And certainly we didn't have equality even now. We like to think that we are democratic, but as your studies and as you just said, we didn't have majority rule, and some would question even if into the 60s. I think you're giving us more credit than we deserve.
Yes,
going back
to
the 20s.
Right.
I agree. So, how do we account for this? you know, the disparity between what we believe and what is actually going on, the loss of democracy, the constant war that, based on lies, most of it, if not all of it. How do you explain this?
I wish I had the macro intelligence to say, aha, I know why we're doing this. I don't know why the American empire continues to spread. I mean, if you look at a map of Africa and the number of military bases that we've put in Africa only during the Obama administration, it's just incredible. We have why are we doing that? And each time we say, well, it's because of Boko Haram, or it's because of the Al-Shabaab, or we're trying to help fight the war on terrorism. And we have killed people under Obama in 10 different countries during his administration. I mean, we just killed some people in Libya, and again, 3 days ago in Somalia. So we're fighting at least 10 separate wars right now, and everybody's sort of used to the fact that that's true and that that exists. A Russian would say, well, we're having actions in Syria, and there's some connection here with the Ukraine, but those are the only two involvements that Russia has. So your question is very profound, and I don't know if there's an answer to it. Why are we doing this? Is it because we want to tie up the world economy and have everybody working on the reserve currency of the dollar, which allows the Federal Reserve to print as much money as it wants? Is that the reason? I don't know. What is your interest? What is your opinion?
Well, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people on this show, and I think Dwight Eisenhower had it right, quite frankly, when he warned basically against our military-industrial complex. Now it's become a military-industrial surveillance media complex, and I think they're all in bed together for the money, and they're controlling the message. And that's why I want to be a little kinder to the American people, because I really believe they're not hearing the truth, even on what we would consider real news. Wolf Blitzer is not unbiased. In fact, watching these debates, and we could talk about the debates. I think you might have some interesting things to add there, too. But watching these debates, they're not tied to reality for the most part. And even the people hosting the debates, I listen to the questions, and I'm going, wait a minute, what about the fact that climate change is probably going to destroy the only home we know? What about, I mean, it's a lot of it's delusional in my mind, because, and you're the psychologist, but is there such a thing as collective psychosis? Is there such a thing as, can we all be actually, as Americans, a little bit collectively crazy?
Well, you know, if you go back to Nazi Germany and you see those thousands and thousands of people saluting, you certainly can say, well, this wasn't just Hitler who did what he did. This was also mass psychology that was involved. And we have, you know, Donald Trump is sort of turning on mass psychology and anger and middle-class white anger. And Bernie Sanders is also playing into the mass psychology that's gurgling around that says, we've had enough. We've had enough of establishment, politically correct images of who we are and what we're doing, and we're unhappy with what's happening. Do you know? Do you remember that? Did you see the Democratic debate in Detroit? The Republican debate in Detroit.
I might have missed that. I can only tolerate so much.
I know. But
I might have missed that one.
They were talking, they were arguing, they were using vulgarities, but there was nothing related to the city of Detroit. Detroit is the most miserable city in the United States, according to a poll. There are 50,000 wild dogs running through the city of Detroit. They have 7 ambulances in the city to take care of 800,000 people. If you look at the statistics of Detroit, it is absolutely appalling. And yet, there was no discussion about unemployment in Detroit, about the evisceration of the city by getting rid of all of the automobile companies and sending them off to Mexico and China. And it was amazing how this lively debate had nothing to do with Detroit at all.
Yeah, it comes back down to and comparing empires. The Roman Empire, of course, was famous for the circus, right? For the Colosseum and all that whole kind of a distraction. And so, what do you find in your studies? Kind of related to that. I mean, you mentioned it before about the reality shows and what we're actually watching and what. But somebody is controlling that amount of time and what we're being presented with. We have how many hundreds of channels now available to us, and mostly it's nonsense.
Uh-huh.
Is this part of our not wanting to look too closely at ourselves, or is it trying to hold on to that mythology that we want so badly?
I think it's a corporate, more of a corporate conspiracy. I really think that, and the corporations are, I don't know how to answer this question exactly. Let me go digress a bit. I have a friend whose wife is an executive producer of a Food Network show, and she's a young, aggressive, intelligent person. And I said, you know, on these Food Network shows, I watch them because I like to cook, and I like to get recipes, but I don't like to see people getting humiliated, like, here's a chef, and they didn't live up, and they've been eliminated, and they break down in tears, and I'm sorry, your salad was just too dry, and they cry. And I thought, why do you have that kind of a spectacle on a cooking show? Why don't you? What you turn cooking shows into reality TV? Why do you do that? You're the executive producer, and she says, because people want it. And I said, do they really want it? And she said, yes, sir. You're old fashioned. You just want to know about cooking. And I said, do you really think that people will tune into a cooking show because they want to see other people humiliated and cry and lose and have a winner? And, you know, and she said, yes, they do. And that's what sells products, and that's what sells things on television. So in a sense, if you generalize from that, that's what the news is doing. We're trying to tweak you, get you excited, hypnotize you, mesmerize you. And because we really want to sell you a Toyota.
Well, Jerry, we've got a caller, so I'm going to take this caller and see what she has to say.
Good.
Let me get her up here. Mel, you're on the air.
Well, thank you, Professor Croft, for being available to us to have an opportunity to talk to you. But in the line of what we're talking about this morning, I'd like to just go back a little bit to what TV offers for people and how, if you can see it, can make a connection between the reality of today and the non-reality. And two examples I was wondering if maybe you could comment on would be the program Newsroom and how that might have influenced the thinking of people, and also the current series that's on Showtime, House of Cards. If you can see in any way, are people making the connection between the reality and the non-reality of what's actually happening in our world? Could you comment on that?
Well, thank you for that question. I think I only saw the Newsroom, so I don't feel competent to comment. But House of Cards is, by the way, one of the most popular shows in China. And I think that says a lot, because the Chinese think this is how America really works. And in a way, I mean, both the lead characters in House of Cards are basically sociopaths who are manipulating and who have no respect. They're just playing the game so that they can stay on top and win. And I think the latest episode shows his wife undermining his own performance in South Carolina because he undermined her performance, and now she's trying to negotiate herself into becoming his vice presidential candidate. But it tells us, I think, the subtext, the meta message is the world works this way. It is a dog-eat-dog world. It has nothing whatsoever to do with equality, justice, right or wrong. It's who wins, who's the strongest. And I think that is communicating a message that is probably fascinating to the American people because they believe in their heart of hearts that this is how the world actually operates.
Yeah, and I agree, and it's but I would guess it's far more emotional and sexual than reality. I've watched the full series over several years, but what struck me is the background information about what's going on in the world is false. In fact, it's propaganda, which is interesting because most people are watching and they're emotionally involved. And all the propaganda is just coming right straight through.
Example.
In this last series, they talk about they have the Russian president, Petrov, they call him, obviously Putin, right?
Uh-huh.
And they show Russia as somehow being irrational, driven by he's also kind of a sociopath in the
right.
series, but they talk about Russia being the aggressor and Russia doing this and having certain roles in the world, and
right.
But basically being corrupt and vain and it's more to me seems to be a projection of our mythology onto the Russians.
Absolutely. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, if you just look at the Ukraine for a second, your point is absolutely there. I mean, the propaganda is so thick that Putin is a bully, a sociopath, a mafiosi. They show him on television with sunglasses, it's always showing off his masculinity and riding horses half naked, and that's our image of Putin. And 85% of Russians approve of Putin. He is incredibly popular, and we just completely delete all of those statistics. When you talk about the Ukraine, the United States basically overthrew the government of the Ukraine. If there's a YouTube video showing the U.S. ambassador talking to a member of the State Department, they're effectively choosing Yatsenyuk, who became the interim prime minister and then the prime minister of the Ukraine. And what Americans don't realize, for example, they think Putin aggressed against the Crimea. 80% of the people of the Crimea speak Russian. Only 20% speak Ukrainian. And that province of Russia was Crimea was part of Russia for something like 170 years. None of those contrary facts get into American consciousness. And the mainstream point of view is Putin invaded the Ukraine, he took the Crimea, it deserves to be a victim of our sanctions, and they will always be in effect until he returns the Crimea to the Ukrainian people. So our perceptions of reality are very, very skewed, and they're unreal.
Yeah, and I think Mel's question, of course, Newsroom, I don't know, if you haven't watched that, you probably should watch it as a series, but I watched the whole series. And in fact, I haven't recorded because I thought it was so great.
Uh-huh.
But it was the opposite. It was taking a fictional newsroom and going back in time and telling the real news that we didn't get at that time in the past. So it was very, in fact, and that could lead into something else. But let me take a little bottom of the hour break and bring our listeners up to date so they know what they're listening to. And then I have a couple of announcements and we'll come back to some more of our American delusions.
Okay.
You're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Our guest on the phone is Professor Jerry Croth, Associate Professor Emeritus at Santa Clara University. We're discussing empire, collective delusions, and propaganda. Our call-in number is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Well, let's come back to our guest, Professor Jerry Croth, talking to us on the phone. We're talking about American delusion, American mythology, how that affects us. And if you'd like to call in, you can call in 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Well, Jerry, I look, and I've had other psychologists and and people that write about psychiatry on. And sometimes I look at America, can we possibly look at us as one single kind of a personality? And if that's the case, are we so sick with delusions and denial that we have become dysfunctional as the American personality?
I think the answer to that is yes, but it's going to take a little explanation. Not dysfunctional in the sense that we are like Kim Jong-un and we're ready to nuke someone, all right? So we haven't reached that point of loss of contact with reality that we are willing to engage in some kind of capricious nuclear war. So I think in that sense, there's a certain layer of sanity that restrains us from what we're doing, all right? But certainly when you look at global warming and the propaganda about global warming, the fact that the Arctic is melting, the tundra is melting, the Arctic is warming four times faster than the rest of the Earth. The temperature in Anchorage, Alaska, overall has risen 6 degrees in the last decade. The urgency of this problem and the fact that 30% of Americans think it's a liberal hoax, and the scientists don't believe what they're saying, and that it's an exaggeration. Only 2% of Canadians feel that way, but Americans are very much duped by their media and about the seriousness of this problem, and we're getting to a tipping point with respect to whether or not we can bring things back from the place that we've brought them to. I mean, the United States and China are the primary culprits in global warming. Both those countries have to be stopped. And I think one measure of American dysfunctionality is the fact we can just pretend that, we passed another resolution and maybe we'll cut back on coal. It's far more serious than that. We shouldn't even be trading with China. When you realize how much coal they're burning. They're burning more coal than the United States, Japan, Canada, and Europe combined. It's a very sad story. And I don't think our ability to deal with the global warming problem almost exists at all. And in that sense, we have a little bit of a collective mental illness.
Yeah, if we were a human being and treated our personal life in the same way, we would probably be in such dire straits that we would be seeking professional help at this point. And I agree with you, the threat of global warming is so important, imminent, and beyond anything that we have had to face as a culture, a civilization, or a society. And I've had several people on the show, Guy McPherson and Paul Ehrlich, that are warning about all of these things. And yet we see very little. And it's interesting because what you do see is you see small groups at local levels or, not at the federal level because we don't see our candidates. I mean, Bernie Sanders brought it up and Hillary Clinton talked about it because he did probably. But we don't see our government institutions don't seem to be functionally capable of responding. And I'm with you. We do know the answer. I had a wonderful gentleman, Mark Jacobson, on the air, Stanford environmental climatologist, and he's got the blueprint. We know we got to go 100% renewables in a very short period of time. And yet, as you say, we don't seem to be able to respond.
No, and our political system and the corporate media together are going in the opposite direction. I mean, Fox News and Glenn Beck and Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh—they're still they're still in denial. They're still telling us it's a liberal conspiracy. And people, do you realize that there are 278 Republicans in Congress, and only 7 have spoken out about global warming? That's 3%. Okay, the majority of the Republicans, who are the majority in Congress now, are either indifferent, or they're not interested, or they're opposed to doing anything about global warming. Well, that's the United States of America.
And you talk not only about that, but you talk about something you call the psychic immune system, and I think I see parts of that. I know maybe I'm even a little part of it. We see down at the street level people that are willing to get out and get arrested and block traffic and speak out against all odds. Is this part of the psychic immune system? And
no,
how does that work for us?
Well, the psychic immune system is a different concept. It's a book that's coming out that I'm publishing through a publisher in Maryland, and it'll be out in a couple months, I think. It's a different concept. It's basically saying that the human race has a protective layer that protects it against the dark side of it, of the human condition. And so in that book, I believe that I make the case that even though the United States and China may not be responding properly, in the course of time, the human psychic immune system will solve this problem. We will not go extinct. It may not arise out of the United States particularly, but the solutions for global warming will come in due course. And it's a hypothesis that it's a very positive view. And I'm not ready to go into that yet, but I'm not trying to say that America is going to rescue itself. I'm not sure America is going to rescue itself. Somebody else may rescue the world from America.
Or we could possibly collapse.
Exactly. If we imploded, remember, the only time CO2 emissions went down in the last 45 years was when we had the Great Recession. So if there was a major collapse in the world economy, we might see one positive benefit, which would be the diminution of Chinese coal burning and America coal burning and CO2 emissions, what might seriously drop because of it.
Yeah, and to come to the defense of China, which I don't do often, a lot of what you're seeing in China is in response to exporting goods to us after we exported our jobs and our companies over to them. So a lot of their coal burning is to supply the wealthier people in Western civilizations with products cheaper. And so I think we have a responsibility there also, maybe even greater. And I think the Chinese, actually, I read an article just a couple days ago, the Chinese are ahead of schedule to, they're getting rid of coal and are moving towards
they're getting rid of coal. They're,
yeah.
If
they're
you
moving
look at the statistics, they're actually building 197 new coal-fired plants in the next 5 years, and they intend to increase the production about 14%. So they have good rhetoric, and they show, but the reality is that, you know, they're building 4 coal plants in Vietnam, and they're building 27 coal plants in other parts of the world. They still have an industry that produces coal, and some of the dirtiest coal in the world, by the way.
Yeah, coal is dirty no matter where it is, I think. Probably the dirtiest. Here's another fact most Americans don't know, but almost all of the northeastern United States, the rivers are polluted from coal. You don't see pregnant women wanting to eat that fish. It used to be edible, freshwater fish, and now most women that are pregnant are advised not to eat any of that in northeastern United States. So we've polluted our own grounds just as heavily. But, another statistic we could talk about is the fact that even though China has become the greatest polluter per capita, America is still the greatest polluter. And we probably have the largest institution in the Pentagon, the biggest polluter, the biggest waste of energy, probably the biggest creator of greenhouse gases the world has ever known. So, and that is where we spend a huge amount of our tax dollar, basically over 50% every year, probably closer to 60 on war and related, you know, the VA and all of those things, and of course all the illegal ops and the CIA's money is in there too, but they don't account for that. So we're not, yeah, we shouldn't really be pointing fingers at anybody.
Well, actually, yes and no. We burn more gasoline than the next 20 nations combined. So in that sense, you're right. But actually, China has overtaken the United States in CO2 emissions almost for the last 6 or 7 years. Together, China and the United States count for 42% of all the global CO2 emissions, but China is about 23 to 27% of that. So China's ahead of us now. They have they've been burning that much coal that they are ahead of us.
Yeah, and that's what my point was. That's related to our consumption and the fact
Absolutely.
That most Fortune 500 companies are in China. So who is China?
If we stop trading with China, their CO2 emissions would go down by 8%. Because we're asking them to burn coal to make our products, and so there, that's what's happening.
Yeah. Well, let's come back to I was hoping you were going to tell me that the psychic immune system of collective America was going to save us. I was hoping that was our saving grace for today's discussion.
Well, it might. In the last chapter of my book, I talk about two people who are discussing global warming. And one is a cynic who says there is no such thing as a psychic immune system, and we're basically doomed. By 2030, it's all over. The Arctic ice will completely be gone by 2020. That'll be the first time in 125,000 years that there was no ice in the Arctic in the summer. And this is an irreversible situation. But the other voice is the voice of the psychic immune system saying, no, there is a self-preservative mechanism in every human being that puts on the brakes even when we're not even looking, that keeps us from falling over when we have reflexes that protect us, that when we touch something that's hot, our hand retracts, and this immune system, this psychic immune system that protects us, it's our survival instinct, will kick in some mysterious way with respect to this problem. So there are all sorts of things on the horizon. A new invention, a new way of desalinating water, a new approach to a battery storage technology, a new resolve Elon Musk has proposed the Blue Cube. Are you aware of that?
I know that he has probably the most advanced battery technology that's very desirable these days.
But the Blue Cube is an idea about global warming, that if you took a large, 50-square-mile area of North Texas and put a solar farm on it, which would cost well over $1 trillion, you could produce enough electricity for the United States of America on a sunny day. And those kind of massive projects, they may come along in due course if things get much worse, and America may pull itself out of this hole.
Yeah, I think there is hope there, even though I know my friend Guy McPherson would argue against it, and we've had a couple other scientists, climatologists on that talked about the Arctic as being the linchpin, and that we're very close at right now, if not already past that point. And you were talking about the Arctic ice being gone by 2020. Wasn't that the date you used?
Yeah, for summer ice, not winter ice, but summer ice.
Right. Well, they're predicting, no, even before that, most likely. And most of those, something I pointed out on my show, most scientists are very conservative about their predictions because they want to come down on the right side. So they're very conservative. And if they say 2020, that might mean next year. It is 2016, and 2020 is not very far off. So if in reality, if we go there, and not only that fact, but there's more methane and more CO2 in the atmosphere than there's ever been in like millions of years.
Exactly.
So we're in uncharted territory, and if that doesn't get our psychic immune system going, I don't know what should. And I think you'll see it. I think you're seeing it. I think the younger generation, what you're seeing, more young people are coming out for Bernie Sanders than since Obama was elected. And I think the young people get it, and they understand their psychic immune system is probably kicked into high gear because, quite simply, they will have no future.
Exactly.
And so if that isn't motivation, I don't know what is. And that's where my hope is. I tend to be – well, some people would call me a cynic. I would prefer the realist label, but there's a borderline there. I mean, we all – are subject to our own delusions, and even being born into a certain culture, and maybe you can enlarge on that. But we are handed a set of delusions, are we not?
Yes, I think so. But I was just trying to think, what would be a good example of a social movement that basically overturned and overthrew an entire culture? And the first thing that came to mind was the coming down of the Berlin Wall and the collapse of the Soviet Union, which in a sense really had a lot to do with young people and a desire to have a different kind of life than the life their parents led. And they had been very much influenced by the Voice of America and by freedom and by free literature, and it was time. And Gorbachev was the person who came along and said, well, we're going to restructure, and all of a sudden things got out of hand for Gorbachev, and the Soviet Union just imploded. But it was in part due to the fact that young people wanted a different kind of life throughout all of Eastern Europe, too. So I think if you take your rationale about young people and how they're perceiving these situations, I think maybe that might happen here, something on that order.
I think it is. I have a granddaughter who is a very bright young lady, and she attends Mills College there in Oakland.
Yeah.
And you know, her and her friends are out with the Black Lives Matter group, you know, and who has been one of the most effective talking about social movements recently. Besides the Occupy movement, the Black Lives Matter movement have been very powerful and have gained a voice and actually some influence even in these elections, not knowing how that's going to play out. But coming back to your point about social movements that maybe changed a culture, I think we're more apt, and what we see is cultures collapse. Even the Soviet Union was under huge economic pressure at the time. Partially because of the Cold War and partially because they were in Afghanistan. And much like they were spreading out their empire further and further, much like we're doing now. So maybe that revolution or that influence won't come through that. Maybe it'll come through collapse and then a kind of a rebuilding like a phoenix out of the ashes. We tend to be very hopeful. Like Guy McPherson would call what we're doing right now having a dose of hopium.
that's a very interesting term, hopium. Yeah.
Hopium, yeah, that's what he calls it because he's convinced that he thinks we're past the tipping point. And that would bring us to another psychological question. And you see, we see this, that we have a huge amount of people that are despondent and disenfranchised and unhappy and depressed in America. I actually had another question kind of related to that, maybe not, but I've noticed, I don't know if you have, that why do we have so many vampire and zombie movies? And people just flock to these things. They love these things.
Uh-huh.
Is that related somehow? Zombies?
The death instinct, you know. I don't know. But I do I don't know how to comment on that, except that I thought, back to your granddaughter and the Black Lives Matter movement, I was kind of amazed that of these killings. I mean, if you went back to 1967, the Detroit race riot was caused by a police altercation in a bar. where a white policeman shot a black person. Okay? But that sparked an entire insurrection in the city. And when you think about how people reacted in Missouri and other places, it's mild. I mean, there is a Black Lives Matter movement. There were a few stores burned. That was it. In Los Angeles, there were race riots that
Rodney King.
Over 4,500 people were arrested for rioting in the United States during those days in the 60s. That's nothing. What happened lately is nothing. It's almost as if this movement has almost no legs.
Well, we're so distracted, aren't we? I mean, in general, we're out of touch with reality. We're distracted by the circus, and we have so many channels to keep us distracted and deluded.
Yeah, I mean, if Wolf Blitzer gave a story every single day of a white policeman shooting a black man, then this revolution would take hold. If you remember during Vietnam, every single day they saw pictures of Americans killing Vietnamese and Vietnamese killing Americans, and it just kept building on itself. But if the corporate media says, okay, we've had too many stories of white policemen killing black civilians, so let's go on to something else. Let's go on to Nancy Grace and Kim Kardashian and Caitlyn Jenner. And then all of a sudden, they basically shut our consciousness off.
And I was almost going to play a clip from the Matrix movie because you kind of alluded to that in one of your talks. But really, aren't we living in a system of control, mass media, collectively being controlled and misinformed and propagandized? I mean, isn't that apparent?
Yes, and that's what keeps the population at bay, in a sense. I mean, Napoleon said something about religion. He said, if there was no religion, the poor people would kill all the rich people. And I think if there was no corporate media, we would have all sorts of insurrections and civil disturbances that were narcotized by our media, okay?
Yeah, I think so. Because we, instead of reacting emotionally in the world to reality, we're acting emotionally in our front living rooms to a television.
That's right.
And that isn't serving us very well. And so I thank you for pointing that out, because so few people really want to recognize that. We don't want to see that in ourselves.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you remember the program Network?
Oh,
where
yeah.
The
oh,
newscaster
yeah.
says, we've not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Great scene.
Well, that is the voice of the people behind Trump, and it's the voice of the people behind Bernie Sanders, and it's probably the voice of all the millions of Americans whose incomes have been slashed, to college graduates who are working at Starbucks, who see diminishing opportunities for themselves. And there are a lot of unhappy, angry people who have no vehicle to proceed. Where do we go? How do we go forward from here, other than voting for a guy like Trump or Sanders?
Yeah, I think it was John Kennedy, and this just to paraphrase, if you stop the people from expressing themselves and being effective through their government and through democracy, you only leave them one other outlet. And we've got about 2.5 minutes left in the show, Jerry, and I wanted to give you that. And you're kind of talking to that same message. So if you had some words of wisdom or some links or something you'd like to send us to, anything you'd like to say to our listeners.
Here's a quote from Kennedy. This is what you said. Mm-hmm. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable.
That's the one.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you want to know from me?
We just got a couple minutes left, and I thought I'd like to give the guests the last word, because I've been talking too much anyway.
The last word. Well, I have a website, collectivepsych.com, and if you go to YouTube and you put in Croth, most of my lectures are there. I have, strangely, I did a lecture on the Kennedy assassination, in which I have two lectures up there, but one just went viral, and 510,000 people have watched it.
Wow.
It's called The JFK Assassination, What Really Happened. So, and there are a few others that we talk about here on your program, like The Myth of American Democracy or American Collapse or a number of videos on propaganda that I think your listeners would find very interesting. So it was a pleasure talking to you, really.
Well, Jerry, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I will put links to those things. I have most of them already, but I will put them with the archives of the show up on our site. And great talking to you. I just think the work that you're doing is really important, and so thank you for all of that.
Well, thank you for the invitation. This was a wonderful intellectual discussion.
I had fun, too, and maybe we'll do it again.
Okay. Thanks very much, Don.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye, Jerry. Well, you've been listening to Unspun. Our guest today has been Jerry Croth. He's an associate professor emeritus at Santa Clara University in California, and we've been discussing the delusional America, propaganda, and the myths of empire, and where that's taking us to. That's our sign-off music you're hearing in the background. So let me just finish up by thanking Professor Croth one more time for all of his work. He has a lot of great books, videos, op-ed writings. He's been on the Huffington Post, numerous other shows. And so I will put links to all of that stuff on KKRN.org. To find those, you can go to KKRN.org/shows/unspun. And you'll find those and other shows that we've done in the past, over 150 shows there. Next week on Unspun, we're going to be talking with Stephen Zunes, the professor of politics and coordinator of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. And we'll talk about the unspeakable Israeli occupation and aggression in Palestine and other places around the world. And not only that, but we'll also be talking other foreign policy issues in America and where that's leading us to. So tune in or stream us Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. on KKRN.org. And thanks for listening.